David Farrell with us in Wellington, I'm told. David, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Jim.
And Steve McCabe in place in Auckland. Hello, Steve.
Good afternoon.
After 4 o'clock, nude exhibitionism on the beaches of Tauranga, Papamoa, actually. We've got our Cook Street Chorus today with the weekly sing-out of your complaints about life. The government's assistance to Peter Jackson. Why are people still trying to save TVNZ7? What should be done about New Zealand Post? Whereabouts on a plane do you like to sit? Susan Baldacci has topics and questions of her own. Good afternoon, talking about what the world's talking about.
Good afternoon. I think Rupert Murdoch's sort of like the Queen, and so there's lots of excitement online because he's been testifying, so you actually get to hear him. Like the Queen, you never hear her voice, and most of the time you don't really hear Rupert Murdoch, but he's been testifying again in the Levinson hearings in the UK. And this time he says he's sorry. He's very sorry for the whole British phone hacking inquiry. He says, I failed. I'm very sorry about that. It's going to be a blot on my reputation for the rest of my life. The buck stops with me, but it actually wasn't my fault. It was everybody else.
Okay then.
Yeah. And can we just say a blot on his reputation?
Yeah.
He has a reputation any longer?
When I tuned in to watch his testimony last night, what I saw was Rupert talking about the sad alienation of youth in America and the United Kingdom, and how we are letting 30% of our young people down, and we've really got to do something about this, and how his newspapers have been hammering this message for year after year after year. And then I thought, well, hang on, is this the Levinson inquiry or not? And All of a sudden he said, but, you know, I'm going off on a tangent here. Now, to return to your question,
I don't know what he was thinking. Distraction is, you know, subterfuge.
Can I just go back to a comment you made there, Jim? You said you tuned in to watch Rupert Murdoch's testimony.
Yeah.
Are you atoning for specific sins here, or are you just doing general penance?
How do you mean?
Well, I'm sorry.
You're clearly being punished for something, being made to watch Rupert Murdoch. Yeah,
I see what you mean. The British media, I'm not sure if it was The Guardian, The Independent, The Telegraph, has begun for the first time to wonder out loud whether he's going to bring down Cameron.
Well, the Telegraph is starting to talk about that, and it's pointing out things like, you know, it was a Murdoch paper that brought down Neil Kinnock, and that was 20 years ago. The Sun discredited him just before the election, and he lost that. And now they're saying there's all sorts of circumstantial evidence that's starting to come through that it shows that there was, you know, way too much of a close connection between Murdoch and the Cameron government. They're calling it the grand bargain, and that it could be something that brings them down, so we'll just have to watch the space.
There's a lot of distance to cover, I would have thought, David Farrell, before you can prove the grand bargain existed, though.
Indeed, I think people are getting a bit hopeful ahead of the story there. But there has been some significance in what's come out in the last week, the 5 undisclosed meetings.
Oh, yes. Can you just amplify on that, please, for people who haven't heard that?
Testimony came from, I think, Rupert Murdoch himself, that there had been 5 additional meetings between himself and the Prime Minister beyond what had already been disclosed. So obviously that weighs into that he had far too much influence.
And David Cameron is saying, well, they weren't really meetings. They were just, you know, we passed each other in the hallway and put our umbrellas in the same stand.
Well, we may have the same challenge if the lobbyist transparency bill comes in here, defining what is a meeting and what is a conversation.
Yeah.
And remember, you can tell in Britain if it's a meeting with David Cameron or not, did you pay for the privilege?
Was there a horse ride involved?
Well, I loved how Murdoch said, look, I'm not really that influential or powerful. In fact, I've never asked to meet a politician in my life or asked them for anything. They asked to meet me, which, as someone commented, that's the exact definition of being very powerful and influential, when in fact the politicians line up to meet you.
Now, I believe you actually draw a 5-pointed star on the floor, say a few incantations, and Murdoch appears in front of you.
I'll tell you what I saw of him testifying, he's relaxed, he's accomplished, he's a master of the art.
Mm.
Didn't you think? I don't know if either of you saw it, but he certainly wasn't ill at ease or in any way betraying any discomfort.
One of the British papers described him as looking very cuddly and sort of grandfatherly.
Cuddly.
You know, he's a cuddly. You don't really think of Rupert Murdoch as cuddly, but
it's a cuddly name, Rupert, though. All
right. Is that like it's that true. Cuddly elephant in Auckland, where you think they're cuddly and then bang. Mm.
So that's Rupert Murdoch, and that story just rolls on and on. But a story that's rolled off.
Well, a story that's rolled off, a Vogue story. Vogue has, I think, gotten its fingers burned trying to do something more than just sort of fashion-y stories. In March 2011, they did a story about Asma al-Assad, the wife of the Syrian leader, and it was very complimentary, and, you know, it talked about her as a first lady, her central mission to change the mindset of 6 million Syrians, to encourage them into active citizenship and so forth.
It has been very active citizenship, hasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's the problem. So ever since the crackdown on protesters and so forth in Syria, the security forces allegedly killing up to 9,000 people. Suddenly, that story has just disappeared. It's been scrubbed from the Vogue website.
Okay,
it did
gone.
Appear in 2011, and now it's nowhere to be found. It was a 32-word article, and it's just disappeared overnight.
People can still remember some of those quotes, though, about her being the most magnetic of first ladies. It was full of gush, wasn't it?
It was very gushy. The only a rose in the desert is what it was called. And the only thing that even hinted of some of the Assad family history of repression and problems is the description of Syria as a country full of shadow zones.
Shadow zones. Is that how they phrased it?
That's how they put it, yeah.
Well, something certainly arose in the desert.
Yes, something did.
You can't find it anymore on
Vogue. No, so don't try to look for it there because it's gone.
Okay.
Now let's talk about a story about, I think that the journalist feels like journalism is a very stressful job, having put that effort into that story and then have it disappear. And there's a new survey showing a 2012 careercast.com shows the most stressful jobs in the world. And I think the first few, I think we can all pretty much predict. Soldiers,
yep.
Firefighters, airline pilots.
Yep.
What are some other stressful jobs do you guys think? Radio host isn't on there, but possibly after today should be.
Thank you.
Stressful jobs, blog writers. Yeah,
deep sea divers.
Yeah. Deep sea divers, you'd think.
Teachers got to be on there, sure.
Oh, come on. Think of all the holidays.
I do. Endlessly.
Well, here's some interesting things. On the top 10 list, after you get through the police officers and the military generals and the airline pilots, event coordinators. Very stressful making sure that the pâté gets around, you know, in regular intervals.
Yeah, I suppose tearing your hair out looking at the weather.
Yeah, yeah.
For a start, with event coordinators.
Public relations executives.
Yeah, I can understand that. Actually,
corporate executives, especially, I suppose, if you're working for Lehman Brothers, very stressful.
You've got to be on all the time in those kinds of occupations, have you not?
Yeah, and photojournalists is on there, and taxi drivers.
And you've got to badger people endlessly as a photojournalist.
Well, it depends. If you're a photojournalist in, say, Syria, would be pretty dodgy.
That would be very.
Now, we're getting closer with this bullet coming toward me.
On the opposite end of the spectrum, the jobs with the least amount of stress.
Oh, yes, please tell us what those are.
So you will be signing up straight away. Medical records technicians. Nobody, I guess when you're sitting in a room with a bunch of files, nobody really hassles you too much.
No.
Jewelers, hairstylists, dressmakers, tailors, and medical laboratory technicians. Although I would have thought being a med lab person would be very stressful because you've got to get it right every single time. You just can't fudge that.
The stakes are awfully high, aren't they?
I have been a med lab technician.
Have you?
And when I was a student, thinking of being a doctor. And no, it was a fairly relaxed job. The only time it got very stressful, and this was late 80s, was when one of the glass test tubes was marked with a big red star, which means it was HIV, being tested for HIV.
Yeah.
And once someone dropped one of those on the floor and, you know, glass and blood all together, that was stressful. But otherwise, no.
You were checking yourself for cuts at the time, were you? Right
well,
away.
I was just thinking, I'm glad I didn't wear jandals today.
Mm. Yes, exactly. Hairdressers do always look relaxed. In fact, they're relaxing even when you walk in.
I do think that's, not as stressful as some of the other jobs, but I would think having to come up with conversation all day long with people has got to be stressful.
I've had hairdressers who simply don't bother.
Yeah, well, they're not very stressed.
They don't talk to you, they just cut their hair. Is being a pollster stressful at all?
Only when someone gets very irate and then decides to ring you back and demand for 20 minutes how you got their number, why are you ringing them, who can they complain to, etc.
Okay.
And we keep saying it's not compulsory to take part.
I imagine being a prominent blogger would be stressful because you've got to keep blogging.
There's a certain pressure to keep the workload up, but also as interesting as you become more of a public figure too, the sort of knowledge that if you do something really stupid, it's probably going to become quite a big story.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. And Steve McCabe, yes, we all understand the pressures that teachers are under. Greater than in the past, do you think, or not?
Absolutely. It's, I mean, the big pressure we're under now is record keeping and paperwork and documentation and making sure that everything can be produced on demand. Computers are a curse.
Okay, and the police have the same problem.
Oh, yeah.
So presumably their work's getting more and more stressful too.
Absolutely, right. Yeah.
Okay. They're on the list.
Let's go hairdressing.
Here's a very stressful job, having 14 children, especially when you had 8 all at once. Oh. Octomom showing signs of stress, apparently. The police showed up to her house yesterday because her hairdresser...
Ah.
Her hairdresser turned her in.
Her hairdresser said
she had been to the house and thought that it was in terrible shape, saw the children, there were some portable potties outside. The kids were, you know, doing their business outside rather than inside in the indoor plumbing and graffiti on the walls and just a mess, called the police. And the police, family services showed up to check things out to see if everything was okay.
How do you handle 8 children?
I don't
Who's
know.
Got
She's
that
got
recipe?
14 because she had 6 before. I don't know how she possibly does it.
Because she doesn't have nannies, does she?
Well, I don't know if she has nannies or not. She's receiving $2,000 a month in government assistance
That's
because she's
much.
Run out of money.
That's not that much.
I don't know how you would deal with, you know, feed 8 or 14 children on that kind of money.
How does she afford a hairdresser?
Well, this is why the hairdresser dobbed her in. She spent almost $600 having her hair done, and then I think the hairdresser, not looking for repeat business, obviously, thought that she really shouldn't be spending that amount of money on hairdressing.
You see, after all the talk shows have done, you're right at the start.
That's right. They're gone.
Mm-hmm. You're in for the long haul.
And you're left to raise all those kids. The good news is she was on a talk show this morning, don't know if she was paid for it or not, saying she's not going to have any more kids. That's a good decision.
I think we can agree on that
one. The horse has bolted.
8 children the same age. That's unbelievable.
I think you could cope by yourself.
No.
I mean, just physically, no. The feeding, the reading, the looking after them.
I know, and all these people tut-tutting, you know, you come and do it.
Mm.
Yeah, okay.
Well, here's an interesting story out of Perth today for anybody who... I'm not even going to go there. This is just an interesting story out of Perth. Researchers saying that it's actually okay to date and marry your cousin and have children with your cousin.
Why?
That health risks with dating your cousin and marrying your cousin, health risks greatly exaggerated, apparently. This will be good news in Tennessee. They claim that there are something like 1.1 billion people around the world who are either married to a close relative or a cousin, something like that. And
so you don't end up with, they're saying you don't end up with inbred progeny.
Not so bad. Apparently there is a 4-5% higher increase in children of first cousins with major health problems, but that's not statistically huge. So that it's other issues like social and economic issues, poverty, that kind of thing that can sometimes be the real problem.
I'm not much better chance of being part of the royal family.
There you go.
Well, I think Prince Charles has to be a case in point.
Thank you, Susan Baldacci.